mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the Findlay Fire Department is showing off its newly completed training facility with an open house this weekend. Chief Josh Eberle explains how the Strict Center will mean more successful responses across all types of emergency services. Also this morning, there are few issues more heartbreaking than homelessness, especially among America's veterans. The VA is making significant inroads toward making sure every individual who has served has some place to call home. And our community is not immune from the problem. Happening around town, Hops for Hope is a local event to raise awareness and provide resources for Findlay's Hope House for the Homeless. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. Little bit chilly this morning. I have not broken out my windbreaker, my fall jacket yet, and heaven forbid, not the winter coat yet. But I have, I do have the warm pullover on this morning. It is chilly, and if you think that it's cold this morning, just wait till tomorrow. We've got a freeze warning in effect overnight tonight. Into tomorrow, we could see sub-freezing temperatures. They say sub-freezing temperatures. So just prepare yourself over the next couple of days before a warm-up then as we head into the weekend. So I suppose if you're going to get cold weather followed by warm weather, let's have the nice weather over the weekend. I guess Mother Nature is in sync with us. With respect to that, you know, the other thing that it is right now, coming up this time of year, white-tailed deer entering their mating season, and the Ohio Department of Natural Resources warning drivers of those hazards. The animals become more active and tend to come into contact with humans more often, it says here. I love the way they put that. The white-tailed deer becoming more active and tend to come into contact with humans more often. State officials reported well over 100,000 deer-related traffic crashes between 2018 and the end of last September. So over the course of, the past 5 years, over 100,000 deer-related traffic collisions. Nearly half of those happened in the months of October, November, and December. So this is definitely the big time for car deer accidents. Peak time is about a month away yet, but safety experts urge drivers to be scanning the road for deer and use extra caution at dawn and dusk. Those are the times when they are most likely to happen. So just something to remind yourself about. As we head into deer mating season in the state of Ohio. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started here. We are less than a month away from the presidential election, 3 weeks away from the presidential election now. Perhaps you have already voted, but if not, I don't know if this will persuade you at all. But Vice President Kamala Harris is going to be sitting for an exclusive interview with Fox News. The network announced yesterday that Bret Baier will interview the vice president and would-be president. It'll air Wednesday, tomorrow at 6 p.m. from Pennsylvania. It'll be tomorrow at 6 p.m. From Pennsylvania, which, of course, is a key battleground state. It will be her first ever sit-down on Fox, on the Fox News channel. So that's not all. A Joe Rogan interview could also be in the works. Reuters reporting that the Harris campaign met with Joe Rogan's team this week about a possible appearance on his podcast. Nothing has been confirmed there yet. Harris, it says, could use the interview on the Joe Rogan Experience to build support among male voters. Men, a very large segment of the listeners of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, and there are millions of them. And she needs to build her support among male voters, as several polls indicate former President Trump leading in that particular demographic. So, Vice President Harris on Fox News. That should be interesting. Definitely will not be the friendly media interview that she had on CBS on 60 Minutes, a week or so ago. There were some criticisms of her appearances on 60 Minutes and on The View and, you know, those types of programs. So Fox News, a very different audience and a very different interviewer, but it'll be very interesting to watch. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories. First things you need to know this morning. A new analysis finds that the safest state for kids on the internet, is Utah. They examined online safety-related crimes, cyberbullying, online safety legislation, and mental health support for youth. And Utah, they say, the safest place for kids on the internet. Hawaii and New Jersey come in second and third place. Now, the reason I bring this up is because at the bottom of the list, the worst states for kids on the internet, Oregon, California, Alaska, New Hampshire, and Ohio is number like 47, whatever it is. Those are in the bottom five. Ohio in the bottom five. We actually score fairly well for, online safety legislation. But we don't do so well in some of those other metrics. So Ohio, one of the least safe states for kids on the internet, according to this analysis, and the metrics they used. That's something to keep in mind. Let's see. Halloween right around the corner. And are you keeping your pets safe with your Halloween decorations? Now, we know that animals, dogs particularly, should not have chocolate candies, particularly milk chocolate. Is it? It's milk chocolate, right, that is the problem for dogs, or is it dark chocolate? Anyway, chocolate and dogs don't mix. It can be toxic. And so chocolate candies should be kept away from dogs. But that's not all. Pumpkins can be dangerous for dogs, especially puppies. Now, puppies can eat pumpkins when they are skinned, baked, or turned into puree. But the skin and the stems of the pumpkins can be harmful to our pets. Andrew Leal, who is an animal care expert. I don't know that he's a veterinarian, an animal care expert with the platform Waggle, says pumpkin stems and leaves are covered in tiny prickly hairs, and they can be harmful for dogs, especially puppies. And especially if puppies are in that chewing stage and they see a pumpkin stem, they go to chew on it, that can be hazardous. So to keep your dog safe, he says, get rid of the leaves and the stems and or keep pumpkins out of the reach of pets entirely. So for us, it's kind of like Halloween is kind of like Christmas with the fake trees. We do fake pumpkins because, you know, pumpkins go bad and, you know, real pumpkins, yeah, they're great, but they do, you know, go bad, and then what do you do with them? And you compost them and all of that. So we have the fake pumpkin decorations around our house. But just something to keep in mind if you have pets in the home. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know this morning, and you might have heard the story that McDonald's, speaking of Halloween, McDonald's is reintroducing their Boo Buckets. As of today, you can get Boo Buckets at Mickey D's, but that is not all. No siree, Bob. Not to be outdone, the folks at Burger King, a big announcement here. For ranch lovers, your life is about to get a whole lot better. If you have ever dreamed, I'm just reading from the news release here, if you have ever dreamed of a tub of ranch dressing big enough to dunk your entire Whopper in, Burger King and Hidden Valley Ranch have teamed up to give you exactly that. The Big Dip is an 8-ounce wide-mouth container designed for maximum ranch coverage. For comparison, the usual rectangular ranch serving container is only 1 ounce. So beginning tomorrow, October 16th, you can get the big dip at participating Burger King restaurants. Here is the kicker, though. And you can dip your entire Whopper in ranch dressing. Mmm, yum, yum. Here's the kicker, though. It will not be available everywhere. It's only at select Burger King restaurants in select cities. Now, the press release here says there is a tracker on the Burger King website to see if your area is included in this promotion. But I can save you the trouble. Northwest Ohio is not included. Nearest to us would be Chicago. The cities participating: Miami, L.A., New York, Chicago, Houston, San Francisco, and Dallas. So not available in our area. And it's interesting, on the website, when I went to check it out to see if, you know, there were any restaurants around here participating in this, it made a point on the website to clarify that it is not available for delivery. So if you were thinking of ordering delivery from a Burger King in Chicago, no, they won't do that. It's not available for delivery from Miami, L.A., New York, Chicago, Houston, San Francisco, or Dallas. However, there is an out. There is some good news in this, even though it is not available at our Burger King. There is also a limited supply of the new Big Dip that you will be able to order online at HiddenValley.com. So not from Burger King, but from Hidden Valley. You can order it online. But a limited supply. Go and order yours now. You're welcome, America. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly cloudy today, a high in the low 50s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 30s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is investigating a two-vehicle fatal crash that happened in the village of Republic in Seneca County. The Highway Patrol says a 71-year-old from Fremont was traveling southbound on State Route 19 on a Harley-Davidson when he crashed into the back of a pickup that was stopped at the stop sign at State Route 18. The motorcyclist was flown to a Toledo hospital by Life Flight, where he later succumbed to his injuries. The driver of the pickup sustained minor injuries and was taken to a hospital in Tiffin. Get more in this story on our website. The former CEO of the Columbus Zoo, Tom Stolf, was sentenced to 7 years in prison for stealing zoo funds over more than a decade.
He also agrees to pay more than $315,000 in criminal damages to the Columbus Zoo, the state of Ohio, and the IRS. He is one of four zoo executives accused of defrauding the zoo of more than $2 million and using the money for personal benefits.
ONN's Kiara Lake reporting. Awakening Minds Art held its 14th annual art auction, raising funds to support its therapeutic and educational visual art programs. The live auction featured artwork created by AMA students who work with instructors to develop non-art-related goals through art making. The art auction is AMA's primary fundraiser, highlighting the organization's mission to provide inclusive therapeutic art programs to individuals of all ages and abilities. Learn more about Awakening Minds Art in this story on our website. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources will release 14,000 ring-necked pheasants at public hunting areas this month and next.
Releases will begin Saturday, October 19th, during Ohio's youth small game hunting season, and continue on October 26th, with three more dates in November, including Thanksgiving Day. Ringneck pheasant season runs from November the 1st until November the 12th. Eric Brown, ONN News.
And we have the list of locations where the pheasants will be released in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning, the Findlay Fire Department will be showing off its newly completed training facility with an open house this weekend. Chief Josh Eberle is with us in the studio this morning to talk more about the Strict Center, what it is, and what it means for the department and really for all types of emergency services. And Chief, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it, first of all.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
So folks have been watching this going up over the past several months. This is the one that's over at Fire Station 4, the east side. And this has been kind of a long time coming. It's been sort of a dream of the fire department to have this facility on site where you can do all sorts of training.
Yeah, that's correct. We really started this project in about 2018 with the research and trying to figure out what kind of facility would work best. And as we got deeper into the project, we realized that the need was greater than just the city of Findlay, that it really included the entire county. So our project got a little bit bigger and bigger, and then ultimately we ended up with what we've got out there, which is a really fantastic
facility.
Isn't
that the way it always happens? These things, it grows and grows and grows the more, but it's all good because, as you were mentioning in some of the reporting on this, allows you to collaborate with a number of other emergency services beyond just the Findlay Fire Department, other fire departments, other agencies as well.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's something that we realized when we started digging into this project is, you know, in almost every emergency, you've got a couple different components. You've got a fire component, you've got a law enforcement component, and you've got an EMS component. Mm-hmm. So those agencies or those entities work together all the time, but we rarely train together. And part of that is due to schedules, but part of it is also having a facility that will allow that type of scenario-based multi-agency training. Mm-hmm. And we never had that option before.
Yeah. So what does the Strict Center allow you to do, and how do you go about utilizing this resource?
So I tell people that we're really limited by our imagination, because there's not too many scenarios that we can't make very realistic out there and train on. Mm-hmm. So with the facility that we ended up with, so there's two different buildings. There's a live fire training building we call the burn building, and then there's a training building that houses our classroom, a drive-through training bay, and a search house. And then we've got the training pond out there, which was there to begin with. Mm-hmm. There's just a ton of scenarios that we can create. For instance, the Northwest Ohio Canine Handler Group was in there. I think they've been in there twice recently. And they create their own scenarios that make sense for them. Mm-hmm. Now, the Van Loo Fire Department was in there doing some training a couple of weeks ago. They built some scenarios in the burn building with hose advancement drills and things like that that made sense for them. And the Findlay Fire Department's used it as well, creating our own scenarios. So there's really very few things that we can't realistically train on.
Yeah. So, and I would imagine it also allows for some collaboration and sharing of best practices, that kind of thing.
Yeah, correct. We anticipate this very quickly to become a regional training destination. And what I'm really looking forward to is departments working together or training together that typically don't. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you naturally share information and you just pick up little things that work better for one department that you may be able to apply to your own or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's where the benefit of this will be long-term, is expanded skills and knowledge just by having those departments kind of train together.
So stepping back here a little bit and just talking about, you know, we mentioned why all of the things that you can do with a facility, and that being one reason why this is important. Before the Strict Center, where would you get this kind of training?
It was difficult. You know, we were fortunate here in Findlay because with flood mitigation efforts that have been happening for the last, well, since 2007, but really the last 10 years in earnest, there's been a lot of homes that were flood damaged or buildings that were flood damaged in the floodplain that they were being raised.
Yeah.
And all of those local entities that were in charge of that, whether it was the county or Flood Mitigation Partnership or the city, they were always very cognizant that public safety agencies could use those buildings to train in. Mm-hmm. So they would reach out, and we were able to utilize those to do some hands-on training, but we were limited in those
yeah.
because those houses were being torn down for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that the end of that kind of effort was coming.
Yeah.
So we looked at what we could build to replace it.
Yeah. And as far as training centers that are like this one, if you wanted to do a training session in this type of environment, where would you go? I mean, where would be the nearest available facility outside of this one?
Yeah, there's very few that incorporate all the different facets that ours has, that the Strict Center has.
Mm-hmm.
One of the benefits that we had was we took our time in the research and design phase. So we went all over the state and we visited about a dozen different training facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we took little pieces of each one and incorporated it into our design.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we went as far as Athens, Ohio, over by Akron. We went down around Columbus, Dayton, and we picked up little things from each one.
Yeah.
For us, we rely on the Ohio Fire Academy a lot, which is in Reynoldsburg, outside of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is Owens Community College has a emergency response program up at their Toledo campus.
Mm-hmm.
But the offerings are limited. We really like it because it's local.
Yeah.
Our firefighters and our police and all the county firefighters and all the public safety personnel in the county can train here, and you don't have to spend an entire Saturday.
Right. You don't have to go to Columbus or go to Toledo or something. It's right here. And as you mentioned, kind of interesting that, again, it is not going to be utilized just by the Findlay Fire Department, or for that matter, even just Findlay Emergency Services. It can
Correct.
Be used regionally as well. So we mentioned that there will be an open house for folks to see what it's all about. That'll be happening this Saturday, right?
Correct. Yeah, the public support for this entire project has never wavered, and we really think it's important to allow the public to come in and take a look at the facility. You know, they've heard enough about it.
Right.
I hope that everybody's impressed when they come in and see it. We're pretty proud of it.
It means a safer community, ultimately, and that is a good thing. And the timing of the open house and the timing of us talking about all of this is pretty fortuitous, too. Last week was Winter Fire Safety Week, and so you'll be sharing some of that helpful advice and information with folks to make sure that they stay safe, because this is a very common time for house fires.
Correct. You know, when the seasons change, different systems get kicked up in your house. You're using your furnace that hasn't been used for a long time.
Right.
That kind of thing. So you do see an uptick in incidents like that.
And, of course, with the holidays coming and all of the dangers that come along with that. So a lot of good fire safety information to be had as well. And, again, this is all happening on Saturday, right?
Yeah, Saturday from 10 o'clock in the morning till 1 p.m.
Okay.
At Fire Station 4.
We've got a link up for more information if you want to learn more about it. The Strict Center open now, and as you were mentioning, already being utilized by agencies, including the Findlay Fire Department and all over the area. Chief Josh Everly with us this morning. Chief, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So a little bit later on in the program, we're going to be talking about the Hops for Hope event to raise awareness and provide resources for Findlay's Hope House for the Homeless. It is an issue that is even an issue in our community. But before we get to that, again, a little bit later on in the program, I want to talk about the homelessness issue in the context of veteran homelessness, because it has been one of the most heartbreaking stories to make headlines in recent years. But there is some good news on this front. The Department of Veterans Affairs recently announced that it has permanently housed more than 41,000 previously homeless veterans across the country. They had a goal to do this within a year's time. I think it was a year-long initiative to house 41,000 or 40,000 or more homeless veterans. And they actually met their original goal a month early in this initiative. And joining us to discuss the VA's Housing First approach is Meg Cabot. She is chief of staff in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And where do you, to what do you attribute this recent success? Again, you met this goal about a month early. What do you credit that to? What do you attribute the success to?
Well, first I want to say thank you for your interest in this topic and for having me on. So I think our success this past year has really been about an approach that we're calling one team. And what that means is that we have groups of individuals who work in a variety of different programs at the federal, the state, the local, be that city or town, the county, and even at the neighborhood level, working together to identify veterans who are homeless, to identify the barriers keeping them out of permanent housing, mm-hmm. and then to address those barriers. So those groups are meeting on a regular basis all across the country in every community to identify veterans and then get them housed based on their own unique needs and circumstances and the unique needs and circumstances of whatever that community may be.
Yeah. Now, not to throw cold water on this, because it is a very good news, obviously, and a great start, but the VA's own numbers say it's like 22 out of every 10,000 vets are homeless, and the numbers are growing. How do you keep this positive momentum going moving forward?
Well, we're gonna keep this positive momentum moving forward in a variety of different ways. The first is to make sure that this population, that this problem gets the full attention and full backing of the entire Department of Veterans Affairs. And we do that from the secretary on down. The second thing is that we continue to support and empower the thousands of men and women who work with homeless veterans across the country for VA. And, you know, many of those individuals are veterans themselves. Some of them are formerly homeless veterans who really understand this problem in a way that those of us without that lived experience can't possibly understand.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, certainly this takes resources. So we're going to continue to work with Congress. And I, you know, thank Congress for their really bipartisan support of our homeless programs that we have. And lastly, it takes the entire community. And we got to keep this one team approach moving forward, expand it where it may not be as robust as it is in other places around the country, and continue the good work that we've started there.
Now, honestly, working toward housing homeless veterans is a pretty easy sell. You go to any group or agency and say, this is what our goal is. We want to house homeless veterans. That doesn't take much convincing. But as we know, homelessness is not exclusive to veterans. It is a major issue in many, if not most, communities around the country. Are there any lessons learned from this VA program, this initiative, that could be shared with local communities on how to tackle homelessness just within communities in general?
Absolutely. I think, you know, VA is the largest integrated healthcare system across the country. And our goal is to provide world-class healthcare to every veteran. And so we know that having a stable place to live is a part of accessing that world-class healthcare and really achieving a level of wellness that allows you to thrive within your community. And so I think one of the things that we know and that we encourage is to make sure that veterans are we're not just helping them find a place to live, but we're helping them stay in that place to live, which means we're providing a variety of different services, from mental health services to substance use services to providing training and education, job support, whatever it may be, so that they can stay in that housing and really thrive.
I was going to ask you about that, to kind of expand on this, because we've talked in the past about how innovations within the VA healthcare system have led to innovations in healthcare for the general public. And I would imagine, again, the same sort of principle could apply in this case. So can you expand on some of those services that you provide to homeless veterans and how they might translate to the non-veteran community as well?
Sure. So I think I can start by talking a little bit about our approach to even temporary or emergency housing.
Mm-hmm.
And we follow what's called housing first, which means that we really reduce barriers. There's not a lot of rules. We want a veteran off the street into some kind of housing so that they're not sleeping on the street. And this allows that veteran, without a lot of barriers, without a lot of paperwork, a lot of bureaucracy, to just get themselves settled, have a place that they know that they can return to, and allows them really to get their feet under them. And this approach then allows us to get to know that veteran, figure out what the next steps are to get that veteran placed in permanent housing. So I think those are some of the lessons that we've learned over the many years I've been at this, to really meet veterans where they are, have VA come to them and meet them where they are so that we can then get them in that permanent housing.
As we mentioned, it is a tremendous success of the VA's Housing First approach. More than 41,000 previously homeless veterans across the country have found permanent housing now, but there is much work that remains to be done. As we said, where do veterans go get help, or perhaps the family or friends of a veteran that we know who needs help, where do we go?
Great question. And so I have two answers for you. One is we have a national call center that's manned 24/7. And I would encourage any veteran who's experiencing homeless, families, as you mentioned, who are aware of veterans experiencing homelessness, or if a veteran is concerned that they may become homeless, because one of the things that VA does well is we're able to prevent homelessness through a variety of different programs.
Yeah.
In which we can help veterans make their rent payments and provide other kinds of services so that they can stay where they are. So that number is 877-424-3838. We also have a website, and that's va.gov/homeless.
And I would imagine also at that website, second part of that question, for the benefit of those stakeholders in communities who are looking at this success and say, this is terrific. What can we glean from that to incorporate to the community in the larger sense? More information available on that website as well.
Absolutely.
Again, Meg Cabot is Chief of Staff in the Department of Veterans Affairs, talking about addressing the problem of veteran homelessness in this community and the good work that is being done. Ms. Cabot, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We lead off today's broken news with this story that happened over the skies between San Diego and Las Vegas. A woman on a Frontier Airlines flight to Vegas out of San Diego suddenly realized at some point during the flight, she realized that she left her phone behind. Oh, man. So you can understand her reaction because, you know, you leave your phone behind. So she at first politely asked if the plane could turn around and go back to San Diego so that she could get her phone. You understand why she would want to do that, certainly. But upon being told that no, the plane could not turn around and return to San Diego so that she could retrieve her phone, that's when things started to get weird. I mean, if they'd only complied. Then we could have saved ourselves a broken news story here. But no, they refused to turn around, daggummit. And that's when the woman exclaimed that she was the president of the entire country and an affirmed sovereign ruler of the government. Demanding that the plane turn around because she was the ruler of the country and an affirmed sovereign ruler of the government. She also claimed to own seven continents, which, what I learned in world geography, that's all of them. So, you know, congratulations to her. She owned seven continents. But it really actually begs the question that if indeed she is president of the country and an affirmed sovereign ruler of the government and the owner of seven continents, what was she doing flying Frontier? Why was she flying Frontier of all things? I mean, you'd think that she'd be able to afford better travel accommodations, but in the end, no, they did not turn around and go back to San Diego. I'm sure that she had a good time in Vegas nonetheless. weird things happen on flights to Vegas. It's just weird. Never fails. Never have gone to Las Vegas. Something weird has happened to happen on the flight. That one is a new one. Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of travel, this is a story. It's not really an international story. The woman actually is a Chinese national. But here's the story. A Chinese national has pleaded guilty to trying to smuggle 29 Eastern box turtles into Canada by kayaking across a lake from Vermont. What? Wang Yining, age 41, individually wrapped the turtles, which are an endangered species, by the way, individually wrapped them in socks and stuffed them into duffel bags, according to the report revealed by the court. Report was obtained by the Associated Press. She ended up pleading guilty to one count of unlawfully attempting to export and send 29 Eastern box turtles out of the United States contrary to international law. Allowed to transport these turtles into Canada, Ms. Ning faces up to 10 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. I wonder, is there that big of a market for box turtles? 29 of them? Is it worth the risk? 29, trying to smuggle these into Canada. She's from China, tried to smuggle them into Canada through a lake in Vermont. Not a brilliant plan there. It's not a master plan. Weird. Just weird. Let's see. I don't know anything about the fate of the turtles. Don't ask. I don't know if all of them survived or if any of them survived, but that's the story. This is from the international file, the broken news. In Poland, a man has been sentenced to 22 months in jail for breaking into numerous homes and doing chores. He broke into the homes, didn't steal anything. He just broke in and tidied up. Damian Winilowitz would hang laundry, clean the floor, take out the trash, and did not take anything in any of the break-ins except a single glass of wine. One of the victims came forward after she arrived at her home to find her bird feeders had been refilled. The victim recounts to news reporters, "I wondered if it was somebody who knew me. If it was going to turn into a stalking incident, maybe. If this person knew that I lived alone, maybe I'd been targeted." The man was arrested, Mr. Winilowitz. Was arrested in late July after being caught on a security camera. One of the homes that broke into had a security system, and he was nabbed. But in all of these things, he didn't take anything other than a glass of wine and did all of the chores. Mopping floors, hanging laundry, taking out the trash, refilling the bird feeders. I don't know. I would sentence him to 22 years of doing my chores. That's... be fine with that. And if it all would cost me was a glass of wine, sure, I'm up for that. Let's see, a couple of other items in the broken news here. Black bear sighting in Connecticut. Last year, over the course of the past year, nearly every town in Connecticut has reported at least one black bear sighting. They are getting very common in Connecticut, of all places. This, however, is the most unusual bear sighting. And boy, these bears are getting brave. Witnesses spotted a black bear scaling the fence outside the governor's house this past Saturday. Fortunately, the governor was not there at the time. Governor Ned Lamont's office says the bear simply wandered away after climbing the metal gate of the 19th century estate. Even the governor is not safe from the bears. And scaling the walls of the governor's mansion there. That's weird. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the North American Wife Carrying Championship was held over the weekend in Newry, Maine. Now, in case you're not familiar with the North American Wife Carrying Championship, according to the New York Post, this gets great publicity around the world. According to the New York Post, more than 30 couples competed in the North American Wife Carrying Championship. It is a 278-yard race, so nearly the length of three football fields, during which contestants splash through water hazards, leap over logs, and trudge through mud pits, all while carrying their partner like a sack of potatoes. And the prize? The champion gets the weight of his wife in beer and five times the wife's weight in cash. Now, a couple of clarifications are necessary. Number one, wife is a relative term. Contestants actually do not have to be joined in matrimony in order to participate in this event. And number two, the wife's weight is not actually made public. It's not actually measured to estimate how much the wife's to estimate how much the winning couple receives in the North American Wife Carrying Championship. The winning wife is put on one side of a scale that is balanced on the other side with cases of beer. So it's like a teeter-totter, and they put cases of beer on the other side, and once it balances, that's how much you win. This year's winners are Justine and Caleb Rossler of Wisconsin. They come from far and wide to participate. Winning time over the obstacle course of 1 minute and 4 seconds. So, I mean, it's like the Kentucky Derby. All of this hype, and then it's over just like that. And by the way, this is a three-peat for the Rosslers. They also won in 2022 and 2023. So congratulations all the way around. The North American Wife Carrying Championship. You know, this strikes me as like the least politically correct competition of all time. Carrying your wife like a sack of potatoes. And nobody cares. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Join WFIN for live coverage of the 2024 Cops and Kids Finley Halloween Parade, presented by Lone Depot. Our broadcast begins at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, October 22nd.
Parade coverage on WFIN, presented by Visit Finley, and brought to you in part by Wolfie's, Fort Finley FOP Lodge, Logan's Irish Pub, and T.R. Williams Insurance.
The Halloween Parade is live on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You remember yesterday we were talking about the cost of trick-or-treat candy for the little ones on Beggar's Night. And this morning we have another ranking, the most and least healthy candies or treats that you can hand out. But and again, we're talking specifically candies here. I mean, you can do alternatives to candy that are certainly more healthy, and I don't know that we call any candy healthy, but if you are looking to make better choices, there is some info here to make it a little less scary. Ba-dum-bum. Ranking 100 different American candies based on their sugar content. The unhealthiest of all, again, based solely on sugar content, probably not a surprise, Pixie Sticks. You remember Pixie Sticks? You can still buy those. It's basically flavored sugar. So if you're judging going by sugar content, those would be right up there at the top because that's what it is. Now, Pixie Sticks are relatively low in calories, but high in sugar. The rest of the top 10 most sugar-filled treats: Jawbreakers, Runts, Nerds, Pop Rocks, Sweet Tarts, Bottle Caps, Smarties, Fun Dip, and Gobstoppers. So a lot of those Willy Wonka things, branded candies, are very, very sugar-filled, virtually all sugar. So those are at the bottom of the list. The best choice, and this was a surprise to me, the best choice, the Red Vines or Twizzlers licorice, which I would have thought much higher sugar content, but apparently not. That's actually at the top of the list for best alternatives. The one problem, of course, with licorice is that, as any dentist will tell you, it's a sticky candy, so it will, you know, stick to your kid's teeth, and what sugar there is would just sit there and can lead to dental issues, so keep that in mind. But and this I thought was kind of interesting, a little bit of chocolatey goodness. Now again, you remember yesterday we were talking about the cost of Halloween treats, and we mentioned that a lot of chocolates actually did fairly well in terms of inflation last year to this year. Well, here is better news for the chocolate treats. For the most part, they get fairly decent marks in the survey, the analysis on sugar content. The best of the best chocolatey treats: Lindt milk chocolate, Butterfinger, Payday, Goobers, and Mounds, all among the candies with the least amount of sugar. And again, this is all relative. There really are not any candies that are not high in sugar, but if you're trying to minimize the sugar in the treats that you hand out, those are the options that you'll want to go with. So a little bit earlier on the program, we were talking about homelessness among America's veterans and the VA's initiative to find permanent housing for thousands of veterans who are living on the streets, and how they've done a yeoman's job of that over the course of the past year, meeting their goals actually a month early. And we were talking about some of the strategies that they are using that can be extrapolated and used within communities as a whole, and certainly our community not immune from the problem. Coming up here in the very near future is an event to raise awareness and provide resources for Findlay's Hope House for the homeless. It's called Hops for Hope, and Lori Poland is here from Hope House with more details. Lori,
good
thanks
morning.
Very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This is, like we said, not a problem that we are immune from in our community, although, and we've talked about this before, this is almost a hidden problem, largely in our community.
Right. The, you know, we are experiencing what is termed rural homelessness. Mm-hmm. So different than when you go to a big city, say you go to Asheville, and there's a park in Asheville where the homeless folks gather. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their things, they can sleep there, they can congregate
it's like an
there.
Encampment. Yeah.
Right. It's like an encampment. You see people sleeping on the street. Not that we never see that. Actually, the other day I pulled up to a downtown business and there was a man sleeping on the bench. We do have homelessness, but it's kind of like you said, it's more hidden. We don't see it.
Yeah.
We have seen a rise in the visibility in the past several years, and that's what spawned us to do this walk. It's done in the downtown. We begin and end at Findlay Brewing Company, but because we wanted to to kind of recognize the fact that we know that homelessness is a problem in our community,
right.
And we know that visible homelessness in the downtown could be a problem for not only the folks that are facing homelessness, but for the businesses that are experiencing people like.
Yeah, no one wants this issue. I mean, least of all those who are homeless. I mean, we don't want our fellow human beings to be suffering in that way, but there is a ripple effect that obviously can't be ignored either.
Right. And, you know, it's not a crime to be homeless.
Yeah.
But some folks that are homeless may be experiencing some mental illness. Sometimes it's an addiction. Mm-hmm. So sometimes they can be very scary. It is very scary when you see someone sleeping on a bench. And, you know, but for the most part, it's just a visibility problem. It's not so much of violence or.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because there are all kinds of things that can lead to homelessness. Mm-hmm. Some things within a person's control to a certain extent, and some outside of their control. And part of the conversation we were having earlier, the success the VA has had in housing veterans who are homeless, is removing those barriers to getting immediate housing, things like addiction and mental health issues and so on, removing those as barriers to getting housing, to get people someplace where they can lay their head and call home even temporarily while you work on those underlying issues.
Exactly. You know, in our community, our biggest barrier to finding a place to live is we don't have places to live. We are very, very, we have a housing crisis. It's a national crisis, but we do experience that here in Findlay. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about a housing crisis just for folks on the lower level of the socioeconomic spectrum.
I'm talking about
at all levels.
Yeah.
And so once we can figure out how to address that problem, which really, when you get to the bottom line, it's we need more housing.
Mm-hmm.
We need more places, physical places for people to live, so that could help alleviate our problem. The mayor did start an unhoused coalition, having a lot of the city and county officials, nonprofits come together to talk about homelessness. She started that coalition over 2 years ago, recognizing that yes, we are facing a crisis here with the lack of housing, but we can only go so far.
Right. And when housing is at a premium, then those who are responsible for it can be more selective and say, you know what, no thank you. And
exactly. Yeah, and, you know, of course, we live in a capitalistic society.
Right.
It's free enterprise.
Again, that's not to criticize.
No,
it's just
not
the
at all. But
it's
the reality is I can ask more for my rental because I know that there are going to be, you know, where there may have been 10 people lined up before, now there may be 100 people lined up for that property. And that's what free enterprise is all about. But when, you know, with the people that we work, the people that we work with, they just can't afford those high rents. And we're seeing more people even at a higher level of financial security struggling.
Which leads to the point that one of the things that Hope House does is not just getting people places to live, but then looking at addressing the issues that lead to the situation in the first place.
Right. The more that we can connect our clients to resources that can help them, the better off that client is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
My boss calls it the secret sauce. We have professional case managers. They are licensed social workers who understand trauma and homelessness, who can help guide folks to some of those underlying problems, or you know, kind of uncover some of those underlying problems and say, you know what, I think maybe you may need to have some other resources besides just housing. Mm-hmm. So here are the resources in our community, and we are a community rich with resources.
Yeah.
We also are a community rich with collaboration. So knowing what the other resources are and knowing who the folks at those places are is very valuable.
Mm-hmm. The common perception, and this is largely a myth, is that homelessness comes from a lack of financial knowledge or financial security, making bad decisions when it comes to financial matters. That is not always the case. In fact, it is quite often not the case.
Right. You know, what we saw with COVID was a lot of people who were going along. Everything was fine. All of a sudden, I went to work and I don't have a job today.
Right.
So they struggled. And some of them have continued to struggle to get back on an even keel. But there are, when people ask me, how do people become homeless? There is a laundry list. It can come from, we have seen people that have faced a death, a divorce, an illness, a job that just doesn't quite pay enough for me to get ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm on an even keel, but when something happens and I have a bump in the road, now I'm behind.
Yeah.
Generational poverty, of course, is different when you have generations who have lived in poverty. And so maybe they don't have the skills that our parents taught us about living an adult life and the financial knowledge that we need to be successful.
Yeah.
Most of the people that come to us, over 75% of the people that come to us have some form of income. That is very, very helpful.
Yeah.
They have just changed some benefits for SNAP, allowing people to get better benefits, but also allowing them to do better financially and still receive those benefits. Those are the kind of things that need to happen so that folks who are living kind of that unstable, unstable financial platform can continue to move forward.
Can get some of that stability.
Yes, exactly.
So again, we talk about all of this to emphasize the fact that this is happening here. It is we are not a community that is immune from this. There is no community that is immune from this completely. And we mentioned the Hops for Hope event. You mentioned tying in with the Findlay Brewing Company, hence the name Hops for Hope. Give us all of the details on this here real quickly.
Sure. So this is our third annual Hops for Hope. It'll be on Tuesday, November 12th. Mm-hmm. Starts at 5:30. The cost to walk is $25. You get a limited edition Hops for Hope t-shirt. You'll be the envy of all your friends. Also, we have little goodie bags for the walkers, and you'll get a coupon if you're over 21 to try the Hops for Hope beverage at Findlay Brewing Company.
Awesome.
We just walk, like I said, that downtown block. Someone said, "Are you do a 5K?" And I was like, "Do I look like I do a 5K? No. But we can walk around the block.
If you want to walk.
You may walk as far as you want. Last year, we even had a couple of puppies that came along. One wore his t-shirt proudly. It is just a way to recognize the fact that there is homelessness in our community, raise that awareness. And we have several partners. Premier Bank, Reinecke, Downtown Findlay, and Humana have been partners since the beginning. And this year, we've actually added Union Bank, the Ralph D. Cole Post 3, and Impact Credit Union to our list of sponsors. So we're very, very pleased with that. And then Blanchardville Health System provides the bags, and Findlay Service League will provide some volunteers to assist us that evening. So it's a really nice evening, and it's a really nice way to just gather together and enjoy a nice fall evening in downtown Findlay.
And really make a difference in the community in one of the most significant ways possible. We've got a link up for more information about Hops for Hope and the work of Findlay's Hope House for the Homeless. Lori Poland with us this morning. Lori, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Always a pleasure.
And with that, we will wrap up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, once again, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media. You can sign up for a daily email newsletter and more. Again, goodmornings.net, our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, going out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.